The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
How good is that song? Classic! Fellas, it's opening day. This is exciting. Spring is in the air. This magic moment. Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith,
I'm Molly Karam Rowe.
I'm just saying, that's a classic.
What's
Molly
wrong?
And the classic. I wasn't aware that Molly got down with the classics like that. I wasn't aware of that.
For
I wasn't
sure.
Aware of that.
Yes.
Okay.
Bringing right. me back. Yes.
Like the look,
yes,
by the way.
Yes.
Like the look. Look, the black is slamming.
Thank
it looks
you.
Very, very nice. Very nice.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Guys, let's get it. We'll get to baseball. Obviously, opening day. That's exciting. Jessica Mendoza will be with us later to help us preview it. But we're going to start with some hoops out there in the wild, wild west. And it just keeps getting wilder, fellas. So now that the NBA trade deadline is come and gone, let's take a look at the standings. The Jazz, who dealt with a major scare on Tuesday. Did you see this? An emergency landing. Thank God everyone is safe. But the players were certainly shook up, followed by the Suns. The Clippers, who recently acquired playoff Rondo. The Lakers, who scooped up Andre Drummond, who dealt with a toe issue last night. Toenail, that is. And lastly, the Denver Nuggets. And oh, by the way, Luka, he went off on Boston, putting up 36-8-5, doing all sorts of Luka Doncic things. Stephen A., who's the biggest threat to the Lakers at this point?
I'm incredibly impressed with a lot of things going on in the Western Conference, between, especially with the Phoenix Suns, and obviously the Los Angeles Clippers have come on strong. But my answer to this question is going to be the Utah Jazz, Max Kellerman. They're a top five defensive team in the National Basketball Association. They are top three offensively. They are top two shooting the ball from three and number one in attempts. And then when you take into account the fact that Rudy Gobert, always in line for Defensive Player of the Year because of his prowess on the defensive end of the floor, you combine that with Royce O'Neal defending you on the perimeter. You've got interior defense. You've got defense on the perimeter. And then on top of it all, you've got six different dudes all averaging in double figures. You look at the Utah Jazz, they are incredibly formidable. Make no mistake about it. Obviously, when you think about the Lakers, they're the Goliath, especially with Andre Drummond there. If Anthony Davis and LeBron James comes back, who's going to be able to deal with that front line? The answer would be no one in my estimation. But if there's somebody that has a shot, it's somebody that can play elite defense combined with being able to launch from long range. And the Utah Jazz have shown that they're getting that in droves. And, oh, by the way, as far as I'm concerned, they have a leading contender for sixth man of the year in Jordan Clarkson.
Oh, yeah.
Their coaching staff is doing an outstanding job led by Quinn Snyder. I'm looking at the Utah Jazz right now as the number one threat to the Los Angeles Lakers in the Western Conference.
This is a debate show, so everybody knows. I'm about to tell you you're wrong, but before I do, let me say that what they just went through last night.
Yeah, that's some scary stuff. I know, I'd be scared as hell.
They thought that was it.
Wow.
You listen to the players. They're talking about, they were talking to each other like, yo, this might be it. This might be the end. They thought they were going to die on that plane.
Mm.
Land the plane. Spider Mitchell doesn't get back on and onto another plane and go to the game. I think I'm with him, actually.
Yes, right.
But these dudes.
He did not.
Did not. These dudes go and play
right.
and win.
Yeah.
After something like that, that tells me a lot about their character, actually. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're able to do that, especially when John Morant's going off the way he was a good game. They're not the biggest threat to the Lakers. They are a threat. They're not the biggest threat, and I'll tell you why. They didn't do anything at the deadline to really make themselves better. You know who did? The Clippers and the Nuggets. And let me tell you something about the Clippers and the Nuggets. I'll start with Denver, and I'm going to go to the Clippers next. Denver and Utah had one of the best opening round series you will ever see in any sport. And when we think about Denver right now, we don't really think about Jamal Murray with Donovan Mitchell and, let's say, Devin Booker, right? He's not quite as good as those guys until it matters most. Then he's every bit as good as those guys. Then he's an all-time great, at least he was last year. They have an MVP caliber player when it comes postseason time in Jamal Murray. We already know Jokic is. We see what Porter Jr. is doing. My God, the way he's shooting the ball, the way he's been scoring. And now you add Aaron Gordon to the mix. See, they didn't just add a little player that doesn't mean anything. They added a big, athletic forward in his prime who now has to worry about being the third or fourth best player on the team.
So your answer is the Denver Nuggets?
I'm saying that's one. I think Denver has actually come playoff time.
Who is the one? Who is the threat, Max Kellerman? What the hell are you giving me? I ain't asking for a list.
The
I need
Los
one
Angeles
team.
Clippers.
Okay.
The All Los right. Angeles Clippers are the biggest threat to the Lakers.
Because?
You made the argument the other day. Rondo. I said it would be a marginal improvement, but that marginal improvement can be profound in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They went to a game 7 that they were up 3-1 against the Denver team I just told you about. And it took an historically bad game by Paul George and Kawhi Leonard in order for Denver to squeak by. Now they have the floor general on this team. When you look at how deep the Clippers go, they got 11 dudes, 11, who can really play. They have guys not just like, okay, Kawhi and Paul George, not just like Rondo, but Batum and Ibaka and Zubac and Reggie Jackson. Mm-hmm. And three or four guys I'm not even thinking about right now. They are legitimately 11 deep. Your boy Luke Kennard, I know you didn't love that. Sham for Kennard. Kennard's shooting almost 50% from three.
I don't care. I don't
50.
Care. I don't care. You got to shoot more then. You got to shoot more then. I mean, you can't be launched. You can't be taking
got 11 eight, dudes.
I'm just saying, you got if you're taking 8 shots a game, right, but you're making 50% of your threes, why the hell ain't you shooting more? You got to get him more opportunities. He has to be a factor. I'm not saying that it doesn't matter that he makes threes. I'm saying it only doesn't matter if you don't take enough of them. And that's what he needs to do, especially since you were willing to part ways with Lou Williams. There's no question that in large part that had something to do with Luke Kennard and how comfortable you're feeling with him. Lou, you talk about a perennial sixth man of the year, yeah. And you ship him out. It was never the same since Ty Lue became the coach there. Lou Williams' minutes diminished. He didn't seem as aggressive and as involved and as much of a focus offensively for the Clippers. That's because of Luke Kennard. I got to see Luke Kennard jack up some more shots and take over games offensively the way I've seen Lou Williams do in the past before I'm sold on his arrival in Los Angeles with the Clippers.
I know that the Clippers were that close to getting by Denver and giving you the confrontation you wanted to see with
yes,
the Lakers in the
yes.
conference
and
finals.
And I'm still holding it against them.
And one of the reasons I believe the Lakers won the championship the first year they come together, because mm-hmm. usually super teams, it takes like at least a season,
okay.
was Rondo. Playoff Rondo is real. So they had two guys in the regular season, and in the postseason, they had three all-stars and another floor general to go with LeBron James. That dude's on the Clippers now.
Well, you know what a lot of people miss about Rondo, to make your point, to accentuate your point, is this. When they talk about playoff Rondo, people keep thinking, oh, the playoffs arrive, so he steps his game up. It's not that simple. What happens is that it's a best 4 of 7. So now you get to focus on one team.
Right.
That brilliant savant of a basketball player, Rajon Rondo, if you put him against the same team, you know, best 4 out of 7, he has the ability to figure you out.
It's going to get worse and worse
it's
for you.
It's going to get worse and worse.
That's why they say
that's really what it is.
Playoff time is coach's time.
Right.
Plays out of time. Who knows all the plays? Rondo knows. He's a coach on the floor. That is exactly what the Clippers were missing. They right. got shooting. They have size.
Yeah.
They have every single thing they yeah. need. The right. question is, will Paul George step up? Because Kawhi ain't choking right. again
but
in the game.
But so. I can point this to you. You remember what you saw from Donovan Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, and that brother has arrived. And when you take into account the fact that you have surrounded him with depth, defense, and perimeter shooting.
It's a whole lot.
Utah.
It's all you.
Oh, by the way, come playoff time, you can expect crowds to be there. Maybe not in full capacity like the MLB is talking about doing opening day with the Rangers, but you can expect a crowd. Utah is not an easy place to play for anybody.
The West is so gangster yeah. this year, we didn't even mention Dallas or Phoenix. Phoenix didn't lose in the bubble, and they're on fire.
I mentioned Phoenix at the start. I didn't mention Dallas because I'm not sold on Porzingis.
That's a conversation
things.
For another day.
You mentioned opening day. With the Rangers, Stephen A., we have sound from our president, Joe Biden. We'll play that a little bit later and react to that. The Lakers have the third toughest remaining schedule. They say the West Coast is the best coast, fellas, but we're all from the East Coast, and that is the Beast Coast. And that's where we're going right now, the Celtics. Not looking like Beast right now, though. It has been pretty for Boston. They are now 23-25, below 500, losing 7 of their last 10. Stephen A., what is going on? Do you think Brad Stevens' job needs to be in jeopardy at this point?
Yes, I do. I do think it needs to be in jeopardy. I am not saying that you fire Brad Stevens today. That is not what I'm implying. I like the man personally. I think he knows basketball. I don't think his team is unprepared. What I do believe, and this is just based on my experience as a journalist covering sports for the last 27 years, I can tell when you don't seem to have the pulse of your team. Where it's, we got to understand something, that when you're talking sports, particularly the sport of basketball, Larry Brown, the great Larry Brown, who I'm hoping ends up in Indiana with my brother Mike Woodson, who just became the head coach for the Indiana Hoosiers.
That's right. Congratulations, Mike Woodson.
Last time the Knicks won a division title, he was their head coach.
And then gone for some reason.
How about that? Here's the deal. When you look at Brad Stevens, who's won 55.7% of his games as head coach of the Boston Celtics and has taken them to the conference finals on at least three occasions, actually, here's what we have to pay attention to. You look at players like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, you know they ain't going anywhere. These brothers can play, and they're only 22 and 24, respectively. They ain't going anywhere, okay? Kemba Walker, obviously his health has been compromised to some degree. There's something missing there right now. You could say the same with Marcus Smart to a lesser degree, but I don't know if that's an issue. When I look at the Boston Celtics and I look at Coach Stevens, there does come a point in time where, do they hear you? Are you able to peel, you know, max potential out of them, whatever they got inside of them? Are you able to pull it out? There are times when you look at a coach and you say, X and O's wise, do you know what you're doing? Are you making the right decisions during game time, stuff like that? But I don't question any of that with Brad Stevens. What I see is a guy that's talking to the players, and the players are just not listening. They're not necessarily buying in. And that's what you have to pay attention to. They're going to do their jobs. They're going to be professional. There's not a shortage of effort or anything like that. But I'm talking about the kind of coach like Pat Riley. You hear the stories about Pat Riley. Pat Riley once dug his head underwater in a bucket, an ice bucket, and put his head under there. Everybody thought he was going to kill himself or whatever because of how long he stayed there. Damn near losing his breath and dug his head out of there. This is what it takes. This is the kind of adversity you got to pull yourself up. That's just one thing. There's several coaches who have won that find a way to do things.
I have a question about what you're saying. So just for clarification.
Sure.
Are you saying that Brad Stevens, after a while, a dude spends enough time in a situation,
yes,
it becomes white noise?
Yes.
No pun intended.
Yes.
Right? Or are you saying he's not a good enough motivator?
No, I'm saying the former. I'm saying it just becomes white noise, to use your phrase. That's what it is. And when you got players that young, you got to get veteran. Danny Ainge got to get veterans around them. That'll help. But you, as a coach, knowing what you're working with, you've got to be able to make sure that it ain't just noise to them. And Brad Stevens this year doesn't strike me to be that guy. So, again, I'm not advocating that the man not be a head coach, that he's not a worthy head coach in the NBA, that he wouldn't do a good job for a lot of different teams, because he's done a good job on Boston. But based on the personnel you have, the fact that they're not going anywhere, it's perceived. I interviewed Jason Tatum on SportsCenter, my NBA show SportsCenter with Stephen A., and Jason Tatum put it on himself and the players. He said, it's our job. But the bottom line is, if you're the coach, what are you there for if you can't peel that out of them? And I don't see that in Brad Stevens, and that's why I think if things continue to go this way, Danny Ainge is going to need to move in a different direction.
They have some dispiriting losses this year where the Coach mentioned it. Brad Stevens mentioned it after the game.
Yeah.
You know, whenever the adversity is going to come, you know, basketball is a game of runs. What are you going to do when it comes? Celtics fold, right?
Yeah.
Coach can't give you heart. He can put you in a position, a better position to win. I think Brad Stevens, people should have their eye on Brad Stevens. People should have their eye on Danny Ainge. The same way after Brian Cashman, as Yankees GM. Excellent GM. But not the best in baseball. Why don't the Yankees have the best one in baseball? If I'm a Celtics fan with their tradition, I'm going, yeah, Ainge is really good, but their guy's better than him. Why don't we have one of those guys? You know, I'd like the best GM. He's won one championship as a GM, and it was in a league where there were no other super teams. He had a super team, won one season.
Yeah.
So I think Ainge deserves responsibility. So does Brad Stevens. So do the players. Now, Stevens has to put him in a better position, but let me tell you something about the way this roster's constructed. Their best shooters, the guys you want catch and shooting, don't get to take easy shots like that. Because all three guys, Kemba and Tatum and Brown, create their own shots and then shoot. right, including from the outside. So they're constantly, all three of them, playing a kind of ISO basketball where they have to take and hit difficult shots. That is on the coach. That is also on the construction of the roster. So you got to look at Danny Ainge, too. And take it a step further. They got talent on this team. It's not a bad team in terms of talent. It's not amazing. It's not overwhelming. There are teams in the East with more talent than them. I'm looking at Ainge every bit as much as I'm looking
at
Coach.
Well, here's why I don't look at him every bit as much. Even though he deserves some culpability, make no mistake about it. He's also the guy that hired Brad Stevens, who was doing a good job for the most part in his career. He drafted Jason Tatum, pulled off the heist with Philadelphia.
He's good GM.
Switching picks. He's a damn good executive. We got to give credit where credit is due in that regard. Here's the important part that I think we have to pay attention to, though. When you look at the players themselves, again, you've got young players. You got a coach. Remember, Pat Riley, Stan Van Gundy had taken the Miami Heat to the Eastern Conference Finals. The very next year, being the intense Stan that he is, no one would question Stan Van Gundy's basketball acumen. But Pat Riley looked at his personnel, Shaquille O'Neal, Dwayne, a young Dwayne Wade, Alonzo Mourning and those boys, and Pat Riley said, you got to go. I got to coach this team and coach them to the championship. Dwayne Wade, last four games against Dallas, averaging 37.
Michael Jordan.
I mean, it was unreal. But the point is, that's what you have to do sometimes. Not that that's the case here with this squad, because Pat Riley looked at this championship squad, knew he had enough. They just needed to have the right pulse, you know, touched. In this case, that may not be the case with Boston. But in the end, when we look at Brad Stevens, it's your job as a coach to make sure you got the pulse of your team. And when I look at him, and especially during timeouts and I'm watching, just look at the guys. He's got their heads down.
They got bad body language like in the second half of games.
They're not feeling him. They're not feeling
him. But see,
him.
To me,
he's not taking on no motivation.
You'll feel coach a lot better if he puts you in a position to win. If you want to criticize him and say, look, you have talent, you're not using them well enough, okay. There's too much ISO ball, okay. That's really where the body language comes from. But I'm, again, looking at the roster. It's not like they're surrounded by catch-and-shoot guys, Stephen A. And let's be honest. Tatum and Brown are both excellent. I think inside Tatum somewhere is a first option on a championship contender. Yeah. Are they quite as good as the other superstars in the East? Are they as good as either one of those guys, as Embiid, as Antetokounmpo, as Harden, or KD?
I would remind you, the Boston Celtics swept the Sixers in the playoffs last year, even though Ben Simmons went down. Okay, they were in the conference finals. We see what it is. You just get to a point where you've been around long enough and suddenly your motivational techniques don't work any longer. The players appear to be tuning you out. They're looking for their numbers because they look at themselves and don't expect to go but so far.
That's something.
But don't expect to go but so
far.
But
they're professionals, too.
No, they're going to go out there. I'm not accusing them of not caring at all. Please don't get me wrong.
But I'm saying you can't just be on the coach. They're still professionals.
It's not just on the coach, but the players got the guaranteed contracts and they ain't going anywhere, not with those contracts and not with their youth. So you have to make a change, and you have to make a change with somebody that can literally motivate them at a very high level. That does not appear to be Brad Stevens right now. It just doesn't.
I'm
just telling you what I see.
Boston's made it to the that's fair. Boston's made it to the conference finals three times under Stevens, but obviously they haven't been to the finals now in a decade.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Let's take a look at the top of Todd McShay's second-round NFL mock draft 4.0. No surprise at 1-2, but Todd has Mac Jones as the next quarterback taken off the board, going third overall to the Niners. The Panthers trade up one spot to take Trey Lance at 7th overall. And maybe the most surprising move, the Patriots trading up to 11 for Justin Fields after he falls out of the top 10. Here to break it all down, the man himself, the one and only Todd McShay. Todd, top of the morning to you. I can't believe we're already back here. We are in April, officially in April, the draft at the end of this month. I like the look. Good to see you, sir. And you know where I want to start here, the Niners, trading with the Finns to move up to third overall, and you think Mac Jones is their guy. Why is he their guy and not a Justin Fields?
It's a good question. And to be honest with you, when San Francisco moved up from 12 to 3, my first inclination was to put Trey Lance there, the North Dakota State quarterback, or Justin Fields, one of the two. Because Kyle Shanahan has always had pocket passers, and it works within his system, and I understand it. But I was thinking maybe let's step outside the box and get a quarterback with mobility. I mean, they saw what Patrick Mahomes did to him in the second half of the Super Bowl. They saw with Matt Ryan not being able to avoid that sack late in the Super Bowl against New England and getting out of field goal position. So I thought maybe it would be one of these mobile quarterbacks in Lance or Fields. But I keep hearing from people in the league and then, you know, reporters that we have that are very close to people in the league that Mac Jones could be the pick. And if that's the case, it's only because of his accuracy and the fact that he picks things up so quickly. He started 17 games at Alabama, and I had the first game that he started this past season against Missouri. And Steve Sarkisian was saying, you know, we just needed him to stay in the lane. We've got three offensive linemen that are going to get drafted, two wide receivers that are first-round picks in Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith, and Najee Harris, who's going to be a first-round pick at running back. So he's just got to do what he has to do. Second game we had mid-season, he said, you know, this guy's really picking things up. And then third game, he said, I've never installed more of an offense in a college quarterback than I have with Mac Jones this year. And that says a lot considering Steve Sarkisian's past. So I think that would be the reason why. And the only reason why I put Mac Jones at three is because of the intel. But I have Mac Jones as the fifth best quarterback behind Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, and Justin Fields.
It's crazy, Todd, because I'm thinking about why you would trade up to three to take Mac Jones. That sounds like a reach, except I've heard him compared to Matt Ryan. And you have the Falcons passing on a quarterback. Is it your understanding that were Mac Jones there at four, that they would have taken him as an understudy to Matt Ryan? Because otherwise, why wouldn't you just trade with a team lower down? The Bengals don't need a quarterback, right? Like, you would think Mac Jones would still be there and you wouldn't have to trade as much stuff to move up.
No, I struggled with pick three and pick four more than any of the 64 picks that I did in this two-round mock. And the reason I struggled at four is Atlanta isn't planning on picking this high again in the future. So maybe now is the time to get the future at the quarterback position, even though you have Matt Ryan for the next year or maybe 2 years. But you've got a once-in-a-decade type prospect in Kyle Pitts, the Florida tight end, staring you in the face. And if you're going to try to win in the next 2 years, why don't you pair him up with Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and have a dynamic pass attack? So that was kind of my thinking, and it's not based, quite honestly, on any specific intel in the league. But I think they're in a tough spot. Do you try to win now for the next couple of years, or do you try to get the quarterback of the future? And if it is the quarterback of the future, it could easily be Lance or Fields at that number four spot. And that puts Carolina in a tough position. Carolina, I think, is going to be the next team to trade up to go get a quarterback. But Atlanta's not going to do it. Not in their division. No way they're going to move back to 8 and say, all right, Carolina, go take the quarterback that's probably going to be better than our quarterback for the next 6, 7, 8 years. So I think it starts at 5 with Cincinnati in terms of teams that Carolina could move up from 8 to go get a quarterback.
Todd McShay, you know, this is really directed at everybody covering college football and beyond. When is everyone going to make up their mind about Justin Fields and give us the goods? We started off months ago, he's the prohibitive number 2. Then after that, we said number 3. Then after that, we said 5. And then somebody came up with number 2 or 3. And then now we got Mac Jones, who was at the beginning perceived as being a mid to late round pick. Then he was, he could fall in the top 10. Then he's in the top 5. Now you got him in the top 3. And then somebody, and then others are saying, no, he might go number 10 or 15. We hope that Bill Belichick moves up a couple of spots to get him. At some point in time, when it comes to Justin Fields, isn't it about what he is or isn't, and no one seems to be able to make up their mind about who he is?
Here's the narrative that you'll get from everyone in the league, or most people in the league. I would agree with almost all of it. He is probably the most physically gifted quarterback in this class. When you look at his height, his weight, his speed, he ran the 4.4s in his pro day yesterday. His arm strength and his accuracy. He is a very accurate quarterback. The issue is, when you go and study the tape on him, Northwestern threw a lot of things at him in terms of zone coverage and different looks, and he struggled. Indiana did the same, and he struggled. He struggled in the last game of the season as well. And then, most importantly, there was a team that did a research project, if you will, on studying all of his reads and what he went through this past year. Over 200 of his throws were to his primary receiver. Now, that's a good scheme and having really good weapons. So he's taken advantage of it. It's not necessarily a negative, but you don't see him progress that often from the first read to the second read to the third read. In fact, based off this team's research, it was only 7 times that he threw the ball compared to over 200 times to a second read. So that's what is concerning to NFL teams. And the other thing that I see on tape, quite honestly, he likes to see his receiver come open versus leading his receiver and anticipating throws down the field. So those are the two minor issues. But again, we're talking about 5 quarterbacks in the top 11, which would be record setting for the NFL draft. And Fields is as talented as any of them, in my opinion. It's about getting in the right system and the right situation for him to have great success in the league. And I think all 5 of these are 5 of these quarterbacks, even though history tells us it won't be, but all 5 of these guys belong in the first half of the first round.
Wow. All 5 in the first half of the first round. Todd, let me ask you this. I'm looking at your mock draft right now, and I want to go non-quarterback. The first name you have here, Kyle Pitts, he's kind of skyrocketing up draft boards at this point. Why is he so hot at this moment?
Well, I mean, he's a 6'5 and a half, almost 250-pound frame. He's bulked up. He used to be about 225, then 235, and he keeps getting bigger. He ran in the 4.4s in the 40-yard dash. And you watch him on tape, it's not just about the speed. It's about his ability to separate. He gets off the press. He's agile. He's got a former basketball background, and he does a great job when the ball's up in the air and contested catch. I go back in the past 10 years. I haven't evaluated a tight end and given this high of a grade in the past decade, simply because of his ability to, I mean, you can move him in line if you want. He's not a great blocker, but he's willing. You can flex him out to the slot. You can put him out wide, and he creates mismatches versus corners, safeties, linebackers. You've got to either bracket him or double team him. And that's why, to me, he opens up everything else. And you saw it with Florida this year. I mean, they have Kadarius Toney, who's a really good player, first-round receiver. Kyle Trask, a quarterback, who's a good player. But this is not an elite Florida offense. But because of Pitts, it was elite from a production standpoint. And that's why I think if it's not Atlanta at 4, it could very well be Cincinnati giving that another weapon to Joe Burrow at number 5 overall. So he's not going to last long, and I think he's very likely to be the first non-quarterback drafted in this year's class.
Todd, Zach Wilson, like, I watched much more Justin Fields than Zach Wilson, so I didn't get why everyone was, you know, I guess it's confirmation bias. You watch a guy, you think he's really good. Why everyone was like, wait, why is Zach Wilson too? And in the last several weeks, I've watched a lot more Zach Wilson. Oh, my God. Like, yes, I get it. It's Trevor Lawrence and then Zach Wilson. And the Jets obviously believe that because they could have gotten a haul to trade back if they didn't believe it, right? So obviously they're going to take him second, and that seems to be the consensus. What has changed? Because the reporting that was coming out a couple weeks ago, the Jets don't know what they want to do, and da-da. Two, Zach Wilson is a lock at two. What happened?
Well, first of all, it's my understanding that the Jets never got a phone call from the 49ers. The 49ers started at three and contacted teams three through six. So, you know, basing off that information, I don't know that they had an opportunity to move back. And if you're the Jets, and you're convinced that Sam Darnold could be the guy, do you still want to move back from 2 to 12, even though you're going to get more picks? I mean, they already have four picks in the first round the next 2 years and nine picks in the first three rounds the next 2 years. So they're loaded up on picks. But I think more so today than I ever have before that the Jets are going to stick at 2 and take Zach Wilson. And, you know, part of it is because Sam Darnold has been battered and bruised and he's gone through a lot there. And they're internally, they know more than I do about what Sam Darnold's mindset is. And maybe Sam needs to go somewhere else and get a clean
slate.
But
what slate, is it about Zach Wilson,
Todd? Fresh start.
Because it was like Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, this one. Why is Zach Wilson so locked in as a kid? I see why with my own eyes. But what's changed for football people in the last couple of weeks?
I don't think it's changed. I think it's been like this for the last couple of months. The only thing that's difficult is when you're watching Trevor Lawrence versus the ACC, when you're watching Justin Fields versus the Big Ten, when you're watching Mac Jones versus the SEC, it's a little bit more apples to apples evaluation. Now, BYU wanted to play a bigger schedule. They couldn't because of COVID this past year. They wanted to play better competition. They couldn't. But he dominated it throughout the year. And you see his ability to extend. He's not Patrick Mahomes. Everyone's making that comparison. He's not Aaron Rodgers. Everyone's making that comparison as well. But he's got some of that ability to extend plays, throw off platform, change his arm angles, and the ability to throw the ball down the field with great accuracy. And I think that's the biggest difference. Plus, you look at the analytics of it, too. Outside of Mac Jones, he's the best of all these quarterbacks in this year's class in the three most important areas, in my opinion. Under pressure versus the blitz and 20-plus yards down the field, which are more NFL throws. He is second best behind Mac Jones in all three of those categories, and you see it on tape. Now, will he have a transition from playing the BYU schedule to the NFL? Of course. But I think it's very clear that it's Trevor Lawrence 1 and Zach Wilson 2, and then these other three guys are based off of the opinions of the NFL teams.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
And to help us preview the 2021 season, friend of the show, our girl, Jessica Mendoza. Jess, where are you? We'll get you on camera here in just a second. There she is, beautiful as always. So good to see you. How excited are you? Baseball's back. We're ready to go here.
It's like Christmas, opening day. I mean, it's something, too, you get so excited about because it was such a shortened season. So it was kind of like, okay, we didn't really get enough. So now coming into opening day, I couldn't sleep last night. I don't know. I just feel like it's opening gifts. You don't know what you're going to get, right? You've got all these packages, all these, the Yankees, the Dodgers, but we'll come May, come June, July. We're going to really see what the season unfolds to be. So I'm excited.
Jessica's always beautiful.
Jess, you know who got the best gift? Francisco. Oh, sorry, Stephen A. Francisco Lindor. Let me just get that in here real quick. Sure. 10-year deal,
that's
Jessica. $341 million.
That's crazy.
I mean, Max and Stephen A., you guys are rich, but this is like next level rich, rich. It is unbelievable. What is your reaction to this deal?
First of all, like, welcome to Major League Baseball, Steve Cohen. I mean, the owner for the Mets knew coming in saying that he wanted to spend money. This was his first challenge. I feel like this is his temple. This is what he is going to build this franchise that is now his off of. This mega deal. I mean, think of the biggest deal in Mets history up until this point was David Wright, 8 years, $138 million. We're talking $200 million more from one of the most dynamic players in all of baseball. Lindor, before he's done in this 10 years, could go down as one of the best Mets player ever. When you look at his numbers, his batting average, the golden gloves, all the things, the smile, the passion. New York, here he comes. Steve Cohen, look out.
Jessica, I adore you. You know that. But it made me sick listening to you just now because you remind me of my high school buddy who lives in L.A. Max and Molly know him very well. It's Jeff Brown, my two godchildren, Nicholas and Nicole. He's got them being Mets fans talking about it's a different kind of orange in their uniform. It's a different kind of orange. Do you see it? That's how he's talking. Listen. I get Lindor. I understand it. Got his 341 after holding out and saying no to the 10-year 325 offer. But are we really to believe in the New York Mets when you have to take into account defense has to be played? There has to be a rotation behind DeGrom. I mean, those are elements in baseball that actually contribute to winning. I know we're all excited in Queens, New York about those New York Mets, and it's limited there. Trust me. Ain't no Mets fan anywhere else in New York outside of Queens.
Hey, but are we really supposed to be sold on that? I'm not saying the Mets.
Okay.
I'm not saying the Mets are going to win. I don't think they're going to win the World Series. I mean, this is an exciting – I'm just talking about Steve Cohen as a new owner saying he's going to spend money.
No, I'm asking, do you think they're going to make the postseason?
That's what I'm saying.
I'm asking, do you think they're going to make the postseason? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I think they'll make the postseason. Absolutely. Wild card
really?
Team. I think there's so many possibilities out there in the East. Yes. Yes. If they can stay healthy with their players, I don't think it's guaranteed. They're not the best team in their division even. I mean, I feel like they've got a loaded division. So to even get to that,
I definitely
think this is a talented team.
And at least probably the best division in baseball.
For sure.
Yeah. Jessica, I want to talk. I mean, I know you're dying to talk Dodgers. Yeah, we know. They're probably going to win the whole thing. By the way, I don't want to hear any talk about 116 games is the record. That they're 116 doesn't matter because they got knocked out by the Yankees that year. The record's 125 wins in a season.
That's right.
Win the World Series if you want to break
that's
the record.
Right.
Now, that's one. But I want to ask you about Mike Trout because Mike Trout is a transcendent talent. He has been the best player in baseball basically every year since he entered the league at like 19 or 20. He has 3 MVPs and 4 second place finishes, probably deserved at least 3 of those to be MVP, but he never plays in the postseason. Angels are pretty good this year. How important is it for Mike Trout's legacy? I know this is not basketball, but still, how important is it for Mike Trout's legacy to start making the playoffs?
I mean, his legacy is going to be there no matter what. But I'm with you, Max. I mean, we've got to see this guy. Because if you think about overall legacy, like we're talking about everyone who doesn't watch baseball all the time, knowing Mike Trout like they know LeBron James, like they know so many, the Tom Brady's. That's who Mike Trout is. But because we don't see him past even, I mean, we're talking September 30th, one time we've seen him in his career. But if you're talking about overall legacy in Major League Baseball, I mean, this guy is going to go down as one of the greatest we've seen of this generation. It doesn't matter. But I've got the Angels to win the AL West. I know that that's kind of a controversial with the Astros and the A's, but I think they're a better team. Anthony Rendon coming over last year, they needed pitching. Yeah. They went out and got Jose Quintana, Alex Cobb. I feel like they've gotten those issues. I want to see Mike Trout in October, too. But his legacy, it's going to be there no matter what.
His legacy is going to be there no matter what. But if there's any kind of thing that holds him back, it's his fault. It's his decision because he wanted to stay there. And we can't knock him for wanting to stay in Southern California. You can't knock him for that
at
all.
Do you know what he got to stay?
I'm just saying, 400. But he would have got that from anybody, as you would say. But anyway, just anybody would have given Mike Trout the money.
Yeah, but you have to wait.
Jessica, let me get to my New York Yankees now, the real team in New York City. To me, it's about health.
you guys.
That's right, Jessica. It's all about health. Okay?
Come on, Judge.
I mean, is Cole going to get some help? Is other guys like Severino and others in that rotation, they're going to get healthy? Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, Aaron Judge. Are they going to be healthy? That, to me, is really what it comes down to, their health. Is that the case with you with the New York Yankees, or is there something I'm missing?
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this team has a ton of depth. I do feel like their starting pitching, which was their biggest weakness last year, you get really awed by all of their stars, by the fact that their offense, especially when they are healthy. But even if Aaron Judge and Carlos Stanton, guaranteed, those guys, for them to get through the entire season and not have an injury, that's just probably not going to happen. I think they still win and succeed if they can get their starting pitchers to be able to perform consistently. Being able to add Corey Kluber, I think, helps a ton, but they're missing Tanaka. I mean, it's going to be an interesting season, I think, for these Yankees when you look at the flip side, because it's not the health. I'm not worried about the health of their hitters. I'm worried about the health of their staff. If they don't have that starting rotation, they're not going to get as far as everyone thinks.
A lot of upside on that rotation,
though. So much has changed, yet so much is still the same with these two and their personal agenda. Stephen A., what are you going to do now the Nets are way better than the Knicks and then the Mets are coming? I mean, it's just going to be rough for you. No wonder you're spending so much time out in Jessica's territory on the West Coast.
Let me answer that while Jessica is on the air. Let me tell you something about New York City, Molly. The Brooklyn Nets had better win the championship or they won't be more relevant than the Knicks. The Mets had better win the World Series or they won't be more relevant than the Yankees. And even if they both win, they'd only be relevant for the offseason. The second the next season started wouldn't matter because this is Yankee Town, New York City, baby.
Preach.
Or it's Yankees, okay? As my boy, I tell my boy Jeff and Nicholas and Nicole, I hope y'all are watching. It's a different kind of pinstripe. It's a different kind of pinstripes with the Yankees. The Mets with their imitating selves. Get your own damn uniform.
Just come on over to California.
Come on now.
California.
Yeah, talk about the Dodgers. I know you want to.
But I am coming to California. I love to visit.
Jess, we have to go. Yes or no answer. Dodgers winning it again? Yes or no?
I'm going to go no. Even though I'm West Coast, Dodgers, SoCal, just because they are the best team, it's too easy to say yes.
She just invited me to California. Right, she just said, come on now. And they're going to say they ain't going.
Oh, my God.
Dodgers are loaded. just make a rotation.
You got to have me back.
It's great to see you. I'm sorry, fellas. We got to go. I got some breaking news.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today. The number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Electric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.